similar to that throughout the fraternity.
I've been speaking today with Eric Arneson, past master of Esoterica Lodge number 227, go 227 in Portland, Oregon. Thank you, Eric, once again.
Thank you.
More episodes of Times Like Now can be heard wherever you get your podcasts. Music by the letter J, Cody Robertson. I can be reached by email, trevor@timeslikenow.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Demento, and you are listening to KBOO Portland.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Kenny Halfand. He is the Philip H. Knight Professor of Landscape Architecture Emeritus at the University of Oregon and author of the book Lawrence Halprin. He's here to talk about Lawrence Halprin Fountains, which is a show on from June 23rd to mid-September at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education. Thank you so much for doing Art Focus in person, Kenny.
Thank you, Joseph. We're standing now actually at the Source Fountain, which is the beginning of the sequence of the Portland open face system designed by Lawrence Halprin beginning in the 1960s and taking about the next 10 years to complete. The fountain is a piece of, all these fountains are a piece of an open space system, part of an urban renewal district in South Portland. South Portland was largely an immigrant neighborhood that was essentially demolished during the urban renewal area. It was seen by outsiders as a slum, although it was a thriving, largely immigrant community. The design of the area was by Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill, the architects, and then Lawrence Halprin, noted landscape architect from San Francisco, was called in to design the open space sequence. Some of you may know other works by Halprin, perhaps most notably the FDR Memorial, Giardelli Square, the Sea Ranch development on the California coast. He's one of America's great landscape architects. We're standing here looking at the Source Fountain, which is not very large. It's not even 5 feet tall. It's just a series of essentially a brick pyramid, which may remind people of pyramids, remind some people of kind of Mesoamerican architecture. It was also intended to be a spring, a place of origin. And if you stand here, kind of you look down, a kind of long sequence in LA of trees, also part of the sequence that Halprin designed, all the paving, all the planting, all the trees that you see, that leads you essentially down a long sloping hill towards the next site, which will be kind of Lovejoy Plaza that he designed, the first of his great fountains.
I would say if you're going to come and check them all out, one, they're kind of tucked away. As you come out of the Keller Auditorium, the main glass doors, and turn left, if you wanted to, you could go up the step, go down this area, this road, which is, I guess it's like 4th Avenue. Very last one, which is the first one. And the most southerly one is the Source Fountain. It's quite small, and I don't know that many people know that it's here. I certainly couldn't remember where it was. I had to, like, map it. But it's a great place to start, so I recommend you head north.
You can also get here easily by either the light rail or the MAX line. There's a stop right nearby us.
So, Kenny, you're a landscape architect, professor, and you're expert in Lawrence Halprin. He designed everything, not just the fountains. So where we're walking between the trees, what do you think was on his mind as he designed this?
The design here is complete. Essentially everything between the walls of the surrounding buildings, all the planting, all the trees, all the pavement, all the benches, all the lighting, all of those things. For those who know Halprin's work, you might know in 1963 he wrote a book called Cities, which was largely based on his travels in Europe, and it was a catalog of benches, of water, of lighting, of materials, of people in public spaces. And essentially what he was implicitly asking in that book was, there are these wonderful places in Europe, these plazas and parks and so on, how come we can't have this in America? In many ways, that set the stage for work that he would do and pursue for the next 50 years in his professional career. In that book, one of the things he writes about is about water. The role of water in the city and how there was a kind of magic quality to water in the city, even from just little jets of water to kind of great fountains or pools in the city. The fountains that he designed in this sequence are very much part of that. So if you continue down that kind of line of trees, you come onto this large open plaza, Lovejoy Plaza. It's on a sloping site. You look back up these kind of tiered, kind of striated layers of concrete, in fact, all built out of 2x6s, a kind of standard formwork. And the centerpiece of it is this fountain, which when it was built in the mid-1960s, was unlike any other fountain anywhere. If you see water kind of cascading down it, and wonderfully today when we're here, the water is back on. As you move closer to this, you walk up, if you come from this direction, up these series of steps, and you get closer and closer to this fountain. And what you're seeing is water. Your eye sees water. If you look at any fountain, I think your eye always starts at the stop, the source. Well, here you really, at the lower level, you can't see the source. The source is at the upper level of a series of literally springs or abstracted springs, the water coming down over that and then over the kind of edge of these concrete walls and then cascading down a series of steps. And then along the way, it is either a veil of water, a kind of a scrim of water, a kind of rapids of water, and it does all the things water does. It plops, it gurgles, it mists, it sprays, and so on. And as you move closer, you can kind of, you're standing in front of a large pool, which reflects the fountain, in fact, and is where the water ends up. But as you get closer and closer to it, you experience that, you know, more explicitly. Right now, in fact, it's a sunny morning. As you get closer to the fountain, it's cooler. Water creates a microclimate. It's more pleasant. And in fact, if you like, you can go up and you can touch it. And Halprin, what he really wanted people was to directly experience it in all their senses. Looking at it, hearing it, smelling it. And he was perfectly happy for people to literally get into it. We're kind of standing here, kind of looking at that, doing as it's doing that kind of right now. And you can hear the sound of it. And this is in the middle of the city. There's no traffic around us. This kind of would block out any sounds of traffic or any other activity that you would see here. And then there's a pathway across the front of the fountain, kind of giant stepping stones. And the water comes down from the fountain and, like rivulets, ends up in this large pool. And in many ways, this is modeled on this and Keller Fountain, which we're going to go to shortly, modeled on mountain streams and very explicitly on a group of mountain streams in the Sierra Nevada Mountains. For a good part of his life, Halprin spent days, weeks, in fact, hiking in the Sierras to try and understand that landscape, how it was constructed, what its environment was like. Years before he designed any of the fountains, he had written an article, a wonderful article, in Landscape magazine called The Gardens of the High Sierra. And the point of the article was short, was about in these wonderful places in the High Sierra with the plants, rocks, and water, these were gardens. We didn't create them, but we looked at them as gardens, that they were beautiful and wonderful, and they had qualities that he wanted to bring into the city. Bring these qualities into the city, not to replicate it into the city, not to take the boulders and the plants that you find in the mountains and create a garden like that, but to try and capture its qualities and its physical form. So in the Sierras, you see these wonderful, really very, very quick watercolor sketches of what he was seeing. And water, of course, takes the shape of its container. So if you're in a mountain stream, it's being defined by the boulders and the rocks and the order of the stream that the water passes through. And if you look at these drawings, he has these wonderful both markings, physical markings, little graphic notations that are trying to describe the movement and the action of the water. At the same time, he gives them labels. I'm reading from one of these. He describes the water: a leap, a bounce, a bubble, an eddy, a surge, a glide, a boil, a bowl, and so on. He describes in other drawings how water differs as it goes over flat rock, as it moves between boulders, as it cascades over boulders. It's those qualities that he wanted to bring into the city, bring nature into the city, kind of metaphorically, and to imagine that you're in the mountains. And if you stand at Lovejoy Plaza, there's a large wooden lattice structure at the top of this, designed by the architect Charles Moore, who also had a fascinating interest in water, had written his PhD on water and architecture and then later wrote a book about water and architecture. And this lattice structure is intended to suggest the shape of mountains.
It's amazing because you have a place near the Jameson Square, and once somebody explained to me that's a stylized map of Oregon. It has the dry side, it has the blocky mountains, and then the water comes out of that, and then it makes a pool. The kids playing on the kind of west side. Now, you know, I can see this place completely differently. I see the mountain, that wooden thing. Mm-hmm. It has a sort of, you know, has this metaphorical quality. Can you talk about the stylized way? He uses this harsh, kind of pebbly concrete.
Right.
And it looks like an architect's plan, you know, where they build everything out of balsa wood with sharp edges, like a contour map.
If you look at this in plan, it looks very much like a contour map, but the contour map of only straight lines. It's a topographic diagram, really. And the diagram word is important. And Halperin formulated a design philosophy or design method that he called the RSVP cycles, which stood for the resources, scores, value, action, and performance. And the key parts of that are score and performance, words that come, of course, from the performing arts, from the worlds of dance and music and so on. And where they come from was, Halperin was married to Anna Halperin, who was in her world of avant-garde dance as renowned and as famous and as important as Larry Halperin is with his world. But at their house, he built what was called the dance deck for her teaching dance and became her school. And he watched this and learned from this, and he constantly spoke of design in the city, especially as a form of choreography. And the idea of a design was to create a performance. And that the design would be judged and gauged by the performance. First, of course, would it stand up and be safe and secure and so on. But more importantly, how people would interact with it. How they would perform in it. Sitting in a place is a performance. Walking in a place. Talking as I am now in a performance. Lying down or grand crowds of people there for a literal performance, which was also intended. The other part of the RSVP cycles, which is key, was the score. And in music or dance, you have a graphic score. And you look at that, and from those graphics, you create sound, you create movement. For designers, for landscape architects, for architects as designers, there's something on paper. And there's conventions of that, and he experimented with how you could put something graphically on paper that would encourage to create a particular design, a particular performance. And those begin with those Sierra drawings and then are translated dramatically into the design of these and other places as well. Both of those ideas, the idea of scoring, the idea of performance, are now commonplace in design. They're commonly understood by designers and very much inspired by Halperin's thinkings and writings and promulgation of ideas about cities, especially. He was a great proponent for the significance of public open spaces in the city. This is critical because he was beginning to talk about this in the early and then mid-60s when the state of American cities was not particularly terrific. And people were looking to other places, to the suburbs and area outside of the cities as places to live and places of promise. And they were kind of giving up on particularly center cities, especially. Halperin took the exact opposite idea. That the city was the centers of civilization, the centers of excitement and performance, and they deserve the best attention from designers and policymakers as well.
This Lovejoy Fountain, I discovered it by, I was at the engineering building at PSU, which has loomed up behind it. It's quite a nice silvery building. And I wandered through and I thought, what is this place, this square? There were a few people sitting around, this was a few years ago. And then in your exhibition, you have a lot of photos of when these spaces were activated, and one was a Shakespeare performance in the kind of belly of the fountain. Right. I think the water was off, right, so they could hear. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the intention, this was technically Lovejoy Plaza, and it's a hardscape. It's intended as a plaza, not as a park. In the original notes about the design, there was intended to be shops and places around the plaza. Sadly, now there's one little shop, and most tragically, one side of the plaza is enclosed parking building, and you need people around to activate a space. Portland is filled, particularly now since the pandemic. The streets are filled with people outside and cafes and so on. You can look at this space now and say, like, put the cafes here, put the tables here, bring people to it, and hopefully that will in fact happen. On the other hand, if you are a landscape architect or an architect and you're coming from anywhere in this country or from abroad, the first place you would go in Portland are these two fountains. They have
the Keller Fountain
and the Lovejoy Fountain. They have not just a local or national, but an international reputation. They are well known since the day they were created. They were dramatic innovations that transformed how people imagined these kinds of places could be in the city.
This one is a bit of a nightmare if you're in a wheelchair. Do you think they could ever adapt it because it's all stairs?
These were both designed before, you know, universal accessibility was demanded and legalized, fortunately, as a necessity and as desired. On one side of the plaza, in fact, is completely ramped, and you can get up to that. It is difficult. It would difficult, but possible to get reasonably close to the fountain if you kind of follow, in fact, the contours of the plaza. If it was done now, I think now portions of these steps would certainly be ramped. The Keller Fountain, in fact, almost all of it you can get to, again, with the exception of getting close, quite close to the water via the slopes and the ramps.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Kenny Helfand. He is the Philip H. Knight Professor of Landscape Architecture Emeritus at the University of Oregon and the author of the book Lawrence Halprin. He's talking about the show he curated at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education. It's called Lawrence Halprin Fountains, and it's about the famous landscape architect. And the show runs from June 23rd through mid-September. We're in the third of the locations that we're walking through now, and this is Pettigrove Park. I always think of it as the Teletubbies Park because it's green mounds. It's the opposite of all the harsh concrete. Tell us what he was thinking when he designed this.
Actually, I think Joseph's characterization of this as the Teletubbies Park is rather wonderful because it is playful. It's softer. I think it appeals to children. It's a series of mounds and passageways through those mounds and then plantings, tree plantings around the kind of base of those mounds. And if you look at the mounds, you see that many of them are well-worn because kids especially love to run up and down them, and which is a wonderful thing to do, and you get just a little kind of sense of topography. If you want to think of it symbolically or metaphorically, these are the foothills. Foothills that you see coming out of the mountains as you come into the valley, for example, the foothills and buttes that line the edge of the Willamette Valley, for example. The fountains that you would find on either side of either the Coast Range or the Cascades in the valley. But it becomes a very kind of green, dense, pleasant interlude between these two spaces. And that was largely the intention.
So even on a beautiful sunny day, it's dark and green and very quiet. There's no one here. Was everything around this built when he designed this?
Pretty much. Most of the buildings were here or under construction when he was called in. There have been later additions to things, newer things, but mostly the buildings you see are the products of 1960 urban renewal, SOM, ideas that were current and in fact considered the best professional practice of the day, where a neighborhood was cleared out and kind of wiped clean, the slate was wiped clean, and new buildings were put up. These, for those who know, of course, architectural history, inspired by money, essentially Le Corbusier's idea of towers in a park. You put people in towers and you have large open areas of landscape surrounding them that they could enjoy and kind of free air around them. That idea has proven not to be particularly desirable as a place to live, nor particularly successful.
What do people want now then?
If this same thing was done right now, first of all, the entire neighborhood wouldn't have been demolished. It would have been selectively rebuilt. There were things that were falling apart. There were vacant lots. You'd fill those in. You'd add density to it. You'd have mixed height buildings. As we take this walk, there's no commerce. There are offices that there are people work here, but you need people to activate a space. So there's no question if this was done now, it would have a different character.
There is a fountain in the corner on the east end, but I didn't realize it wasn't meant to have a big gold sculpture in it, so that came later. So this was more of a little park with a pool.
They have other little, there's some stonework here, some beautiful kind of basalt stonework, which is, I'm pretty sure, kind of directly inspired by the stonework that you see along the Columbia River Highway. And Halperin is an individual very much aware of the kind of local context of places and trying to understand them and use materials that are sympathetic in relationship to the location. And I think these are very much so.
We're at the Ira Keller Fountain, which is outside the Keller Auditorium. It's what you see when you go and see a musical or an opera. People come out at the break and they have a smoke and they stand around. But if you approach from the top, it's totally different. It's sort of sloping concrete, and then there are these, I don't know what that shape is, sort of like a triangle with the top cut off, rivulets going down into these pools. What inspired this fountain?
If we're on 4th Avenue, at the upper portion of the fountain, and as Joseph said, this is a steeply sloping site. Most people experience this first by standing in front of the auditorium, where you're dramatically looking at the fountains. But if you start from above, what you're seeing is trees surrounding you. The plaza, in fact, is an entire Portland City block, which is 200 by 200 feet. It is a big U-shaped green berm surrounding it, which are heavily planted. The idea was you'd walk through while you're in a forest, you're breaking through the trees, and you come upon this place. So the water here in four different places begins as if it's a spring coming out of a concrete spring in the foundation of the city. And the water literally just, you can't see its origins. It comes out, and then it moves over pebbled stone as if it was a stream in the mountains. There's small little waterfalls as the water, congeals. It feels like little rapids. You could imagine if you had little toy boats, you know, little toy kayaks of trying to kayak this or being in a canoe on it. And then it assembles and begins to pool at the top of the waterfalls, as water does in a river very often. And then you see a series of blocks as the water cascades over these edges of these blocks. And these blocks are various sizes. You can look into them, and each one, many of them are little pools. And in fact, these are deep pools where one can stand in them. And technically, you're not supposed to be climbing in the water and so on, but people climb all over it. They stand in it and interact with it. And again, here, if you looked at this space just formally, it's a series of straight lines. It's all kind of straight. There's nothing curvy. There's nothing, quote, seemingly organic, although it's inspired dramatically by the organic landscape of streams in the mountains. And here, while we're here today, it's in the morning. It's part of this is sun and part of this is in shade. So on hot days, you can find shady places. On cool days, you can be out in the sun. And everywhere, everywhere, there's the sight and sound of water bubbling at the end as it goes over cascades. Still water that reflects things. Water you can see through and see the pebbled surface of the fountain. Water is in kind of moves rapidly as well as slowly. And if you then wander around the side of the fountain, it's a kind of large ramp, so in fact one could access this on a wheelchair. Right now there's a couple sitting on one of these blocks. And you see this all the time, of people kind of sitting and staring kind of out on the blocks. Because as you come around, if you were confronting or seeing the fountain for the first time from the other side, it's dramatic. There's nothing like this anywhere. There's nothing like this. You come upon it in the middle of the city. There's this kind of wondrous, I think, kind of joyful expression in the middle of the city. A real gift to it. The only place I can think that's kind of like it is like the Trevi Fountain in Rome, where also people just stand there and kind of ogle and wonder at that kind of great sculptural environment. And the other thing is, as I'm standing here looking at this, is it is also a sculptural environment. It is dramatically sculptural. It's composed of these series of blocks in a way that it kind of accentuates its kind of formal qualities, the kind of drama of those. And it's essentially a grand piece of art. And landscape architects create these works of art.
Would it be a bit of a stretch to say it's based on Yosemite in the sense they have that high area
And then everything cascades over into the valley and drops like 5,000 feet.
I think that's a perfectly reasonable characterization. And amongst one of the last designs Halprin did in his life was he redesigned the walkway, the main walkway, to Yosemite Falls in the valley. And it was a kind of wonderful punctuation to his career because he had been inspired by the Sierras. And there he got to design, in fact, what the entry to the most popular site in the Yosemite Valley.
I would tell the listeners they have to go see Lawrence Halprin fountains at the Oregon Jewish Museum before the mid-September. But you also have to get out and see all the fountains.
There'll be walking tours through South Portland. You can easily, if you're at the museum, you just hop on the light rail and get off, and you're walking distance to the fountains. If you walk between them, it is 1.1 miles, which is not a very short walk through downtown Portland, which is safe and wonderful, and you should spend time there, absolutely. The primary idea of the exhibit was to show Halprin's ideas about water, and then the inspiration behind the fountains displayed in the drawing.
As we stand in front of the Keller Fountain, I mean, the audio is probably a bit bad, but what do you see?
Well, one of the things I see right now, I see watch three little kids, and what I presume is their mother, perhaps her sister, a babysitter, taking pictures of them, and they're just sitting here staring at the fountain. And it's essentially kind of, it mesmerizes me whenever I see it, and I think it mesmerizes others. At the top of the fountain, there's two little girls playing and sticking their hands and feet in the water up there. It's inviting. It asks you to look at it. It asks you to participate in it. It asks you to come back, I think, because it's kind of ever-changing. It changes with the light. It changes with the seasons. We're standing on it now, looking at it right now. There's one little piece that is, in fact, directly inspired by this region. There's a stairway, a water stairway, which is intended to really replicate the fish ladders going up the Columbia. And I have seen kids, though, climb up the fish ladders.
I've climbed up that fish ladder.
Okay. Okay.
My favorite bit.
I was inspired to become a landscape architect by the work of Larry Halprin, and I think others were as well. My first visit to Portland in the early 1970s, the first place I went was the fountains. And I think that's true for most designers. I continue to be inspired by him and by these places. I think they're extraordinary. They're a kind of never-ending delight and a wonderful gift to the city, and it is just wonderful every time to come and watch people interact with them, which is exactly, I think, what Halprin wanted.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Kenny Halfand. He is the Philip H. Knight Professor of Landscape Architecture Emeritus at the University of Oregon and the author of Lawrence Halprin, a book about the landscape architect. And he's also put together the show called Lawrence Halprin Fountains, which opens June 23rd, closes mid-September, and it's at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education. Thank you so much for doing Art Focus in person.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Add him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all. Thank you.
sintonizando KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 27 de julio del 2021. Las perspectivas económicas son divergentes para los países, en gran parte en función de qué tan bien están implementando las vacunas COVID-19, según los nuevos pronósticos publicados hoy martes por el Fondo Monetario Internacional. Las perspectivas económicas están mejorando para las economías avanzadas, donde casi el 40% de la población ha sido vacunada, a pesar de los desafíos de las nuevas variantes del coronavirus, dijo esta organización. Al mismo tiempo, las tasas de vacunación mucho más bajas han dejado a las economías emergentes y en desarrollo